This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. If you could take a pill right now that would enhance your concentration, increase your productivity, and reduce your stress levels, would you do it? What if everyone else at your workplace were taking these pills? Would that sway your decision? Drugs traditionally prescribed for patients with ADHD to treatments for narcolepsy are already popular as study aids for college students. Now, nootropics or smart drugs are on the rise by American workers looking to enhance their cognitive abilities. Carl Cederstrom is an associate professor at Stockholm University and co-author of The Wellness Syndrome. He wrote about the ethical dilemmas surrounding the growing use of smart drugs for the Harvard Business Review and joins us now via Skype. Carl, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Now, in your article, you cite that nearly one in five Ivy League college students report taking brain-boosting drugs, many off-label, meaning they're not prescribed for them for a particular condition. How do people typically obtain these drugs?
If we look at the industry of these medications, it's huge. I mean, the number of drugs for ADHD is massive, and a lot of people do have the diagnosis, they do have prescriptions, and for college students, obtaining these drugs is not very difficult. Usually they would know someone or they would have people around them who would either give them or sell them. And if that is not an option, there are also ways of obtaining these drugs over the internet.
What are some of the benefits, either real or perceived, of using smart drugs?
I think the drug that has been most discussed and at the center of a lot of these the controversy about using these drugs is one called modafinil, which was originally designed to combat narcolepsy. The studies that we've seen so far suggest that taking these drugs, especially under sleep-deprived conditions, may help people to make better decisions and be better at planning. This is what these meta-analysis that people have done recently. There was particularly one study that was co-authored by, it was a Harvard-Oxford study, schools working together and finding that these were some of the benefits that could be noticed when people were using these drugs.
And narcolepsy is, of course, when people fall asleep. So this keeps them from falling asleep.
That's right. So this is something that is originally designed for people with something which is making their life very difficult on an everyday basis. Of course, falling asleep is something that will make your life very difficult. But it could also be used, it turns out, for people without narcolepsy and still having some of the benefits in terms of removing tiredness or making people better at concentrating, even when they are tired.
Can we compare the effects of these drugs, modafinil and also ADHD drugs like Ritalin or Adderall, to other substances that people do use without a prescription, you know, maybe a coffee drink or an energy drink, you know, a double espresso? Is this just a step up?
That is what a lot of people would say. And I should stress that I'm not an expert in the medical part of this thing. I mean, I think what I find most interesting and striking with the use of these drugs, whether coffee or more advanced drugs, is the extent to which people are trying to make themselves more productive and using whatever means and whatever techniques are available.
Well, it sounds like better planning, more creative, less impulsive. Those are some of the effects. Are qualities that management would embrace or even encourage. Now, universities have faced this question. Is this cheating?
Yeah, I mean, that's the very core of this moral dilemma. And I think that if you take all of the wellness programs that you're now finding corporations, they are designed to make people feel better, to make them healthier, but also to make people more productive and making sure that they are so healthy that they can work for long hours and without getting ill. If that is what we're trying to do in the workplace when we're studying, then where do we draw the line between what kind of methods we're using? So I think that to understand the emergence of these drugs, it's not enough just looking at the medicines as such, but rather also looking at the atmosphere that a lot of students are facing, where it's great pressure to make sure you get the best grades. And also, if you work in a corporation, you have a lot of pressure to deliver.
Well, I'm imagining that, when somebody gets a lackluster performance review, a manager might suggest drugs. I mean, I don't want to have to take drugs to perform as well as others at work. But the pressure to up the game to get the next best performance-enhancing drug would be on, especially in competitive workforces.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really the heart of this matter, because a lot of corporations would already have doctors, and part of the reason why they are there is to limit the cost of health insurance. It's also about making people so healthy that they could work and be productive. And of course, we would have no objections to that, because we want to be healthy and we want to feel good. And if that allows us to be more productive, great. But then if we do have these other methods, these other techniques, whether medications or other forms of technologies, where we go from just being healthy and work well to becoming very, very healthy and being able to produce even better, would we then want to take that step? So I think that is the moral dilemma. The moral dilemma is not so much cheating or not, because if you think about it, we cheat all the time. Being born into a family which is making great investment in your education as a child is a form of cheating, in the sense that you are then going to have a huge advantage over other kids. And all of the other productivity techniques we're using all of the time, again, with the intention of making ourselves more productive. So cheating is not really the issue. I think that is kind of diverting the attention away from the real issue, which here is how far are we willing to go in making ourselves more competitive as employees or as students or, whatever kind of person we are?
Any problems with using the drugs off-label without doctor supervision that users may not be aware of, maybe other drug interactions that you know of?
Well, again, I mean, I'm not an expert in the field of medicine, and I would not recommend anyone to use these drugs, of course, without consulting a doctor. I've made interviews with about 10 people so far using these drugs, and I've been quite surprised by how aware they are about the effects and how they are being integrated into their everyday life. I think one assumption we have about the use of these drugs is that students are using them to stay awake for one night, maybe two nights, and work really, really hard. What I found speaking to these people is that a lot of them are integrating the use of these drugs into what seems as a very conscious and a very healthy lifestyle. Waking up early in the morning, making sure to eat correctly, then going to the gym, and then working a lot and trying to make that in as an effective way as you can, and using the drugs together with this. So this was something which I found really surprising, because usually when you think about using drugs, off-label drugs like these, and all of the people I've interviewed are technically doing something illegal, they nevertheless do this in a very conscientious way. So that is something which I find really surprising and kind of difficult to get your head around, the drug use, which is a form of, I wouldn't say maybe conformism, but it's a way of trying to make yourself fit better in with the ideals and pressures of modern society.
Well, and also, as you suggest, may widen the gap between those people already in a place of privilege within an organization or within society and those struggling to keep up.
Yeah, I mean, that's another interesting debate. I mean, the people I've interviewed for the research I'm doing at the moment, they come from privileged backgrounds. Many of them have been to very prestigious universities. But you also have a parallel debate to this, which is very interesting, and that relates to medical doctors who are giving these types of drugs, Adderall in particular, which is an ADHD medication, to children who come from disadvantaged backgrounds. And there was a very interesting interview with one of these doctors a while back when he explained that he gives these medications to children without necessarily having ADHD. But what they do have, which is a great disadvantage, is that they are being born into families where it may be very difficult to find the peace and quiet to do your studies. It may be that they are having a social situation which makes it very difficult for them to succeed in life. And what one of these medical doctor said in the interview was that we don't necessarily know what the long-term effects will be of using these drugs, but we do know what the short-term effects are in terms of lagging behind in your schoolwork, getting poor results in school. That means that almost immediately that you will be pushed aside, you will fall behind, and the disadvantages that you will get from those sort of early mistakes in life may be impossible to repair later on. So you've seen people who've been prescribing these forms of drugs to the people who are most disadvantaged in an attempt to help them out, which is another form of very, I would say, morally and ethically difficult debate.
How open are people about using brain boosters at work?
So, I mean, I've had no difficulties finding people to talk about the use of these drugs on a personal level. But of all the people I've been speaking to so far, so it's about 10 people who I met in person and speaking to, and then another maybe 10 and 20, which I've been corresponding with, they all seem to be relatively open about the use of the drugs. They're willing to talk about it, but they all keep it away from their boss, which is a very interesting thing if you think about it, because you could argue that, you know, they do this in order to be better workers. I mean, it's something that in some ways the boss should be quite pleased about, but then at the same time they know that it will be information which will be very difficult to deal with. I mean, in Sweden, for instance, if it turns out that someone is using, you know, drugs, the first thing they need to do is to make an investigation to see how serious this drug use is and send them off to rehab or whatever. But what happens when someone is using drugs which is not affecting work negatively, but using the drugs affecting the work positively? Then we are facing another set of dilemmas. I still haven't found executives who are aware of these things taking place in their workplace and willing to talk about it. But I still hope that some people in that position would be willing to step forward, because I think that would be an interesting people to talk about.
Well, Carl, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Carl Cederstrom, he's Associate Professor of Organization Theory at Stockholm University and co-author of The Wellness Syndrome. We have a link to read his article from the Harvard Business Review. It's called Like It or Not, Smart Drugs Are Coming to the Office. That's at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.